there was nothing left. I would sit there and just, I was forcing it, and I was just dry tank, wheels off, running on the hubs, scraping the concrete, spark flying, just trying to cross the finish line. This is Taylor Stephens, the New York Times bestselling and award-winning author of the kick-ass Vanessa Michael Monroe thrillers, and this is the Taylor Stephens Show with the awesome Steve Campbell, where we are kicking writing in the butt, one word at a time.
I like the way you're doing this intro now. You awesomed me last week, and I skipped right over it until I was editing the show, and it's like, ooh, I hope this is a permanent part of the show now.
The very awesome techie genius Steve Campbell.
Now, let's not get carried away. And today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about limits and not getting carried away. Not trying to be Superman or Superwoman or pick your superhero of choice. We're going to get into some of that. And we're doing this in sort of an interesting way because we are recording this as an episode of The Taylor Stephens Show and as an episode of The Author Biz, which is a podcast that I do with a guest. So you're going to be my guest on my show this week. So if you're out there and you listen to both shows, the only difference between the two shows will be the intros. The rest, the main interview portion of the shows will be the same. And we are now at the what Taylor and I call the chitty chat portion of this show. little insider knowledge there. And today's chitty chat is you've been traveling about and doing some teaching. So how did that go?
It's been wonderful and fantastic, and I am so tired. I'm sure you can hear it in my voice.
I can, actually.
Teaching is fun for me, probably too fun, because it's kind of like how much more fun it is to talk about writing than actually doing the writing. So I love it, and I love the opportunity to interact with readers, new and old, and just, it's a really grand old time. But my brain is switched on constantly while I'm there, because even when I'm not teaching, I'm interacting with people and answering questions, and I love it, but it just beats the heck out of me. And by the time I get home, it's just, I'm dead. And I've been doing it for two weekends in a row now, and I'm just like, I'm so done.
Now, I'm assuming it's different than a writer's conference where you go and it's primarily writers there, but you know, maybe some readers as well. But you're talking about books, so the conversation is books and publishing and things like that. But at an event like this, where you're actually teaching, probably the conversation is all around craft and how do you do this and how do you do that. Am I right?
Yes and no. Like, I don't really do a presentation. Longtime listeners know that I come to the whole writing process very different than most, because I don't have an education, and like literally sixth grade education. And I didn't have anyone to show me the way. I just sort of had to figure it all out. And so in much the same way I do with my newsletters or these podcasts, I answer questions that are all over the map. And I have found that aspiring authors are just as curious about the New York side of publishing, like the big publishing houses and how things work there, as they are about actual craft. So I really spend most of my sessions just answering questions, because I figure, what's the point in going there and talking about stuff that said they might have already heard portions of it or variants of it, you know, the last time from somebody else. So I want to fill in the gap. So it's just a brief introduction, or sometimes not so brief, about who I am and how I got to where I am. And then it's all Q&A straight on out, and it can go all over the place.
You know, I could actually imagine you walking into an event and saying, how much time do I have, with essentially nothing prepared ahead of time, saying, how much time do I have, and is there anything in particular you want me to cover, and then just going out. Is that
pretty much how it happens, yeah. And it's really funny, too, because like when I'm up there and I'm answering questions and stuff, I am completely oblivious to any sense of passing time. And So I usually have to tell whoever's there, or somebody in the room, I need you to be the timekeeper. Give me at least a 10-minute warning. And I'll be up there, and it'll seem like maybe 10 or 15 minutes have passed, and all of a sudden I'm getting the buzzer. So we could go for hours and hours and hours, as long as the questions keep coming.
I totally believe that. Okay, Taylor, longtime listeners to this show probably know that you took a break around the end of last year because you were exhausted, burned out, mentally used up, essentially, in the writing business for a while. Can you talk about sort of what led up to that process and what allowed you to make the extraordinary decision to just walk away for a period of time?
Well, what's really funny is we're getting close to a year since that's happened, and I've already forgotten so much. Because so much is crammed into every day. Sometimes it feels like I'm just living day to day. But I had gotten burned out, like you said. There was nothing left. I would sit there and I was forcing it, and I was just dry tank, wheels off, running on the hubs, scraping the concrete, spark flying, just trying to cross the finish line on what I had done prior. And when I reached that finish line, I was just like, I that's it. I got nothing. And the idea of starting the next project was like, I would be wasting my time. I wasn't going to get it done. And then I would be frustrated because when I'm in that mode of trying to race the finish line, nothing else is getting done, and life is just kind of falling apart all around me. So I just took a step back and took some time off and refused to allow myself to even turn on the computer most days, and just lived and got other things done and spent time with friends and family. And it was really hard, really, really hard to do that as much as I needed it. It did not come naturally.
Now, I think the idea for most people, the idea of finishing a project and then taking a break makes a lot of sense, but it's not something that you had ever done before.
No, never had done before.
So what was your typical process? Finish a project and what? Drink a glass of wine and start the next day on the
next
day?
Yeah, or there might be like a few days in between to get some bills paid and maybe sweep the floor and wash some dishes and then wash some laundry or something. But mostly it was just, all right, well, that's done. Now open up the next file that I already had been fiddling with before and had, my ideas are there and let's get going. Or there would be some other thing, like lots of times when you're writing, you're in the publishing cycle. While one book is being written, there's another one that's being edited, and then there's another one that's been published and you're doing promotion on. So there's usually a juggle of a lot of things going on at the same time. So finish one book off, get one book sent off, and it's like nothing even happened. You've already spinning into whatever it is that's been backed up and needs to get taken care of yesterday.
I'm thinking of how different we are and how different our backgrounds are. For Author Biz listeners who may not know, I'll put a link to the first show that we did where we talked a little bit about your background. But you were raised not in the United States. You were raised in a religious cult, and it was an unusual way of being raised. I was raised in an upper middle class family in the Midwest, and had the Leave It to Beaver type family environment. Yet we both come at almost everything we do from a working harder will get you further mentality, and we've both worked whatever we've been working on. That has been the mentality that we've used to achieve whatever levels of success we've achieved in life. And I find that interesting just because we're so different. Our backgrounds are so different.
I think maybe, I don't know how you feel about it, but it's sort of a human nature thing, personality types or what have you. Or maybe it's just a cultural, but we both come from close enough cultures in that sense that, the whole work ethic type thing, it's like it doesn't matter all those other factors. Maybe the motivations for why we do it might be a little bit different, possibly, but the end result is the same in that we kind of are driving ourselves like, you know, we're our own whip, whipping our own, ourselves, the horse whip to keep us running.
And eventually the horse, if you keep whipping the horse falters and,
yeah,
you know, maybe dies.
Me, yeah.
Yeah. And it happened to me a few weeks ago, and I'm just sort of coming over it now. I just had some very minor health problems, but they all related from self-imposed stress. And my way of getting more done is to just sleep less. And so I started getting up at 5, and then I started getting up at 4, and then I started up at 3, and then I started getting up at 2:30. And so that gave me enough time to get everything done that I needed to get done, because I'm doing—
Does your brain function on so little sleep that it even is productive time?
It functions well enough. And it always has. I've always been able to, as Author Biz listeners may or may not know, I was in the technology business for a long time, and you know, there is this culture in the startup world where the only way to be successful is to work 70, 80, 90 hours a week. And I can clearly remember times when I would go into the office at 6 and leave at 10 for like 6 weeks in a row, just because of something that needed to be done. But I was a lot younger back then.
Yeah.
And I've never made any allowance for the passage of time. And all of a sudden, it caught up with me a couple of weeks ago. And I've really been thinking a lot about it. I had Colleen's story on the show a few episodes ago. Not a few, maybe 10 episodes ago.
For the Taylor Stevens Show listeners, can you explain?
Yes, at the Author Biz. And Colleen writes a blog called Writing and Wellness. And it's essentially taking care of yourself as an author and the things that you need to do, because our focus is so much keeping your butt in the chair. You know, if you keep your butt in the chair, your body, you know, bad things start to happen to your body.
Oh, my God, yes.
After a while.
True.
And that show inspired me to start running again and to start paying attention to some of these things. And oddly enough, while I was sleeping less and less and less, I had time to go running. And I was in roughly, you know, the best shape I'd been in 15 years or so. I felt great. I had energy. Everything was going well. And then I hit, you know, essentially the same period that you hit a year ago, where you just couldn't do it anymore, except my body told me I couldn't do it anymore by having something happen.
Wow.
And then, you know, you have that period of reflection. Yours was about a month. Mine, you know, you know.
It'll be probably about a month before you're really back up into it again.
It probably will be. And I want to be back up into it differently than I was before, because I'm not 30 anymore.
But, you know, I don't even think 30-year-olds should be doing that, so.
It's interesting to me, the number of authors I've interviewed who are dealing with the same thing. I go back to Annie Belay, who was a very popular interview on this show, and I'll link to that in the show notes for Taylor Stevens Show listeners. But Annie writes fantasy, and she went through a period of about a year where she was just really just grinding it out, trying to do this thing that's so popular in the indie world, where the only way to be successful is to just keep writing and just keep publishing books on an ever-increasing schedule. And it wasn't working for her, and her body just gave out. And so she went to a different process, and she's been very successful. But it's so much like the startup world, where, you know, there's only one way to be successful. Mentally, in our own heads, there's only one way to be successful. And if we're not
to produce.
Yeah, and keep producing and keep producing more.
Yeah.
And it's a, I you know, some people can do it. And in the business world, I used to be able to do it. There's no way I could do it anymore. But oddly enough, you know, we transition whatever our history is into our writing process. So, you know, for me, I feel like during the day I should be doing these things because that's when I worked before. I had these work hours. You get up, you start working, and it's such a different world. As an author, you have so much control over your schedule, over your time, over your what you're producing, how much you're going to produce, and in a lot of cases, if you're an indie, even over your deadlines.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that one of the same benefit is the same downfall is that it's on you. So if you're a driven person, you're going to drive yourself really hard, especially when you're not meeting the quote, not I want to say quota, but the volume or the pace or the production level that you feel that you should be able to do. And I think, honestly, as an author, you're always going to feel like you're behind. Always. It's never going to be enough. You always should be doing more. And because you don't have to drive into the office, there's that it's the flip side of the coin. There will be those who have to basically bribe themselves to get into the chair, and there are those who have to bribe themselves to get out of the chair. So it seems like it's a life of extremes. And so many other things get forgotten. And when you're focused like that on just trying to get this done, it's really easy to push all the other things aside. And I think one of the things that I learned is that it's not healthy, really not healthy emotionally or mentally, to put all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. And by that, I mean, like, when all your sense of self or your identity or your feelings of accomplishment are tied into the work that you're producing on the screen, and then that work is perpetually not good enough or perpetually behind, you can really begin to lose sight of what's important in life because you're so focused on always chasing a goalpost that's moving, constantly moving.
All right, let's talk about deadline-driven pressure. You're a traditionally published author, so in a lot of cases, in some cases, you're setting your own deadlines. In other cases, you've got a publishing deadline where something's got to be ready by a certain date. There are times when you just have to make it happen. You can want to have a balanced life with every fiber of your being, but you've got to have this manuscript ready by a week from Friday. So you've got to do whatever you can to make that happen.
Yeah.
How do you, as an author, try and avoid those crushes and recover from them and get back to normal when they're over? Get back to a normal working schedule.
You see, and that's the problem is, like, it's kind of become a normal, right? Where that's the perpetual state of normal. So it's kind of like a situation where you have to admit your own levels of ability and have a good grasp on how long it takes you to do things and just say no when it's too tight. And I've had to do that when somebody's like, okay, well, we want this to be the schedule. And I'm like, no, I can't. It's too much. I won't be able to do it and get it changed. There have been times I've missed deadlines and, you know, I've worked with my editor to accommodate for them of, you know, her schedule and mine and what's the drop dead date and, you know, what's the wiggle room date or whatever. And we've never had to push publication of a book back because of missing deadlines. And I'm very keenly aware of the deadlines, but I've learned that sometimes you just have to say no. And sometimes you just have to work around them and you just do the best that you can.
And saying no probably has to go beyond just things like deadlines, because there are always demands on your time. You know, can you do this interview, or can you come here and teach, or can you do this other thing? How do you manage all of those other things? Because nobody wants to say no.
This is very true, and I do have to say no a lot. And when I do say no, it's always with an explanation so that people understand I'm not trying to be rude or I don't care. I don't think they're not important enough. I'm just like, I'm sorry, I just can't. And so far, those that I've had to say no to are quite gracious about it. Where it gets really tricky is more with home life, of the things that I say no to because I'm not Superman or Superwoman and I can't do it all. You know, I'm not heavily involved. For example, I've never been heavily involved in the school PTA or things that go on. I've never been a volunteer on my kids' field trips or the class mom, you know, that goes in and takes care of things. Sometimes there's important, like I sometimes have to skip open houses and things like that too. I'm not able to cook wonderful, nutritious meals every day. There's just something's got to give, you know. In my case, my kids have had to grow up, and I stopped doing their laundry for them when they were about 8 or 9 years old. Taught them how to use the washing machine, helped them when they had questions, showed them what to do, and they've pretty much been responsible for their stuff ever since. Does it mean that the house is perfect and things are clean? No. That is the no that I had to just accept of there's a trade-off. It's this or that. And right now, completing, for me, the writing is more than just something that I do because it's a hobby. It's my job. It's what pays the bills. And so it might be a little different if it didn't have such dire consequences for not getting it done. And in which case, it might be a little selfish of me to be going, no, 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 to all these other things. But everybody's situation is going to be different. And their priorities are going to be based on what is most urgent. And for me, in my case, that is the most urgent. So
I think that's one of the things that makes the show that we do together, the Taylor Stevens Show, so interesting. And for Author Biz listeners, we'll talk about that a little bit when we get to the close of this show. But we come at this from such different perspectives. You know, writing for me is something that's new. And if it was something that I was using to pay the bills, I don't think I would be able to afford ramen noodles, let alone electricity to cook the ramen noodles. I'd be out collecting kindling wood for fire.
I could be in that position 6 months from now. Who knows, you know? But so far.
And that's probably a fear that everyone has, no matter what level of success that we have. An algorithm somewhere could change and everything could be different tomorrow. And what's working today is not necessarily going to work tomorrow. But I want to get back again to this idea of saying no. I interviewed Honoré Corder a couple of weeks ago, and as almost a throwaway line near the end of the show, she said that my default answer to everything is no. And, you know, that's something that busy people say. But I've always been such a people-pleasing type person that I've always had a hard time saying no. So after she said that, I thought about it, and I talked to my wife Julie about it, and you know, we just between the two of us, we just take on all this stuff to help in the neighborhood or to help at the church or to help with the grandchildren or the grandson, and you know, our default answer is always yes. And so I said, that's it. Our answer to everything is no for the next 2 weeks. And like 2 days later, I got a call. Can you help with this? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I'm like, how am I going to find the time to do this? Yeah. So how do you train yourself to say no?
Well, first of all, it's really good that you say yes to a lot of those things. I think, you know, if the world was full of people who only said no, it would be a very cold and insular place. And I think that probably the yeses are going to have to fall more in line with whatever your life's guiding principles are, like the things that are most important to you in terms of community and connection and all of that, and the ones that don't feed that and don't help benefit your life or drive you forward or fit in with what your true life values are. Those are the easiest ones to say no to, simply because it's easier to say, oh, wait, this doesn't fit inside my long-term goals. And by goals, I'm not just talking about work. I'm talking about all the other aspects, you know, philanthropy and volunteering and all those aspects. When you say yes to something, it's because it is bringing you closer to your core sense of value and self. And if it doesn't fall into that, to one of those things, then that should be the first to say no to.
Do you have a scheduled rest period? Like, you know, Sundays, like I don't do any work on Sundays or anything like that?
Well, it depends on how you define rest, because
I know what you do on a lot of your weekends. I know the answer to that question is no.
Well, I do things. I have somewhat of a schedule where I step completely away from writing or anything work related to this side of work, and it gets me outdoors, but it's very physically demanding. So it's not rest, but it is rest. It's difficult to categorize it one way or the other.
Yeah, and I can't remember I can't remember what book I read this from the first time, but basically the idea that being busy is a good thing, but you need to vary what you're doing to be busy. So, you know, maybe it's going out and running or going out and doing the kind of physical labor that you're doing to balance against the mental work and the mental grind of writing, where you have a completion and a success point that might be 4 months away, and the work that you're doing on the weekend might be something that you could start at 10 in the morning, and by 2 in the afternoon you could say, woohoo, I'm done, and it worked.
Exactly. And when I reached that breaking point last year and I realized that enough is enough, I started taking on things that I wouldn't have agreed to do before because they're time consuming. But I realized that for my own mental well-being and emotional well-being, I had to find other ways to find some sense of fulfillment other than just working on a project that might take me a year to complete.
And how did that make you feel? I don't mean to sound all Dr. Phil, but how did it make you feel to actually have that, I don't know, to come up with that and then to actually do it, to go out and have that sense of accomplishment?
On the one hand, it feels really, really good. And on the other, it can be really frustrating sometimes when all you want to do is just get your darn work finished and this other stuff is getting in the way. So it's sort of like if you view being a workaholic as an addiction, then it's really, really good. And when you're frustrated with it, that's just the addict in you that's angry that it can't go get its fix.
Interesting. And for me, podcasting is something that is discreet. And I'll do an interview with someone like you, and you know, I'll produce the show, write the show notes, and it goes out. It's done.
So you get that...
Yes, you get that sense of satisfaction. Right, as opposed to writing something, which for me takes forever. And then there's always that sense of, it's not good enough. If I could go back and just fix this one part, it would be better, and that would change these other five parts. So that's what I'm going to do.
You do that with podcasts too?
Never.
Okay. Because I listen to them sometimes, the ones that we record, and I'm just, well, first of all, I'm very thankful for you because you clean them up and you make them sound so much better than they are when we're talking. But there are times when I'm like, oh, darn it, I should have said this other thing instead.
Yeah, it is the nature of doing this kind of thing. And, you know, every so often I used to, when I first started doing this, I'd get really carried away and just try and make every episode perfect. And that's a losing battle. And you know, a part of the reason why we're doing this combo podcast today is that I just don't have enough time and energy to record two shows this week. I don't have enough time and energy to do our show and my show. So it made sense to do this one thing because I'm so interested in it right now. And I know you have these strong feelings on the subject as well. What do we normally talk about on the Taylor Stevens Show?
Oh, normally we're kicking writing in the butt. One word at a time.
One word at a time. Right. And over the course of the last few weeks, we try and do a series of three or four episodes that are themed around one thing. And we just finished one where we really went deep into the weeds on a listener writing sample, where we went in and the New York Times... best-selling author and award-winning author, went in and tweaked and then discussed why you thought these changes were necessary, or not necessary, but would make
useful.
The material read better.
Yeah.
And so we went really deep into the weeds for three straight episodes on this, covering three different areas, and people really enjoyed that. So call to action for this week. If you're an Author Biz listener and you think you'd like that, if you're interested in shows about craft, probably 80% of the Taylor Stevens shows are craft-related. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, especially the later ones. Like, the earlier ones are a little bit more research-heavy, but they're whatever they are, they're a lot of fun because Steve and I just basically like, hey, catch up. How's it going?
Yeah, they are fun, and they're funny, and we have a great time. And, you know, because we come at writing from such different perspectives, I think it's interesting for people. And for people that listen that are closer to my end of the spectrum, I play a valuable role in that I'm, you know, almost the foil as the person that, oh, really, is my response to so many things that you say.
You're being very generous with that. But
and I learn from every episode. And which is really helping me as a writer, and that's why we're doing these shows, not to help me, but to help people with these particular issues that we discuss in different shows. And the individual episodes usually are pretty tightly described in the title and the show notes, so it's pretty easy to see. Like, if you're working on dialogue, we've done several episodes on dialogue. So anyway, if you're at all interested in a show about craft, come check it out. You can find it online at TaylorStevensShow.com.
That's correct. I've got more than one link.
Yes, yeah, plenty of places. You can also find it through Taylor's website, which is?
TaylorStevensBooks.com.
And you can find it on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and everywhere fine podcasts are available. If you subscribe to the Author Biz, subscribe to the Taylor Stevens Show.
And I just want to say, for the Taylor Stevens Show listeners who are hearing this, for those of you who are interested in the actual business of writing, publication, like finding the different components, the people who do the editing and the graphic design, if you're interested about, you know, what methods are working for authors and what aren't and finding their audience, you really should check out the Author Biz. Steve does a great job. He has fantastic guests on his show that are all experts in their own right, in their own different aspects of the publishing process. And it's definitely worth your time. And you already know Steve by now, and you know he's fun, and you know he's going to give you good material. So you're just going to get more of the same.
And you can find that at theauthorbiz.com. And same thing, it's available everywhere fine podcasts are sold. Thank you, everyone, for listening this week. This has been a fun joint episode.
It's been fun being with you. And for my listeners, see y'all next week.
And for my listeners and Taylor's listeners, I will definitely see you all soon. I don't know whether the Author Biz will be back next week, but I know I'll be back by the 1st of November, fully energized and ready to go. So thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thanks for being here.